It's time for the Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Also streaming live at KFARradio.com. Sponsored by Compos, your home for fun in the great outdoors. And now your host, Craig Compo.
Okay, Fairbanks, it's another nice Saturday in Fairbanks, and we're talking with, we're going to be talking today with one of our favorite Laundry House gang members. I like to bring them in individually so we learn a little bit about them. You probably hear them on Problem Corner at least once a month. we have a lot of longtime Laundry House folks that date back to at least the 90s or 80s, and I remember my first Laundry House gang meeting with Bill Hager was at 1978 at the El Sombrero. But over the years that this group, and most of you are familiar with us, we kind of specialize our level of expertise is in hunting and fishing, access issues. We dabble in some local politics, occasionally endorse a candidate, although not often collectively. But we really have a strong group of knowledge, and one of the guys that to me is the most valuable guy in our group is with us today is Al Barrett. Al, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Al is the owner of the Fur Tannery in Fairbanks. He's a current Board of Game member, a longtime member of the Laundry House gang, goes way back with us. He's an assistant hunting guide, of course, business owner, like I mentioned. And he's just got a ton of knowledge when it comes to Board of Game issues, when it comes to anything to do with state statutes and so forth. So it's good to have you in the group, Al. It's really good to have you on the Board of Game. Welcome to the show. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about your history and, yeah, you know, what got you here and where you came from and why you started the tannery. So let's start with the early days. Where did you grow up?
Yeah, so, I wasn't born in Alaska, but I got here as quick as I could. I was born in Upper Michigan, the very end of the UP up there, and you know, we listened to more Canadian TV than we did US. And when I was about 8 years old or so, my parents moved down to Wisconsin for better job opportunities, and so I grew up the rest of my time, my childhood in Wisconsin around Elkhart Lake area. And after high school, I joined the Army and was a mechanic and, you know, traveled all around. I was in a few different states, and my last duty station and my first tour was Germany, and met my wife there. We got married there, and like, what better way to start out a family than, you know, have security, you know, job security and housing, and the Army provided all that for you. So we stayed in and we re-enlisted for Alaska, and we chose Fairbanks because it was in the middle of the state, so.
So easy to get everywhere.
I could go anywhere I wanted to.
Did you look at the size of the state on the map when you made that decision?
Yeah. It just never really did justice in my mind until you're actually here and you're like, yeah, I got to go 350 miles to go dip netting, you know?
Yeah. It's so odd to me. Everybody up here talks about miles, and when you go to the States, it's minutes.
Yeah.
How far away is Fargo? Oh, it's about 40 minutes. Yeah. Well, how many miles is that? Well, I don't know. It's 40 minutes. It could be 5 miles. Anyway, you came up. I presume you grew up hunting and fishing, and you had a lot of history of
that. Did a lot of hunting, fishing, trapping in Wisconsin, and you know, I did it while I was in the Army. I was stationed at Washington, South Carolina. You know, I did a lot of hunting in Europe. It was actually a blast over
there.
Yeah, I did a fantastic time over there.
How about trapping over there?
Not so much.
Yeah.
They have a few animals over there, but you know, trapping and archery are kind of things they don't do over there. Archery's, you know, still thought of as a poacher's weapon back from the king's days and stuff. And so there is some opportunity to do it over there.
Black powder, do they do that?
I didn't. Mm-hmm. Wasn't my gig, so
yeah,
I didn't pay attention to that.
Right,
so.
Right. So you, what year? It'd be in the 80s? You were in Germany?
Yeah, I was there in the 80s, and I got I got stationed in Alaska in the late 80s here. They wanted me to restation or with the, you know, ETS to another duty station, and I didn't like the duty station, so I was like, no, I'm staying here. And
so when you decided on Alaska initially, do you remember what your choices were? Did you have several?
Back then, because it was my second reenlistment, I still had a reenlistment option.
Oh yeah.
And so they were still honoring them back in those days, and so you know, in order for me to reenlist, I got to choose a duty station. So.
So do you remember how long before you came up here you got your first game animal?
I was probably got game animals the first year I was here, you know, hunting on military bases.
Sure.
Or on the land, so we could go out and shoot ptarmigan and grouse and things like that.
Yeah.
My first big game animal was probably after I met residency, I shot a moose.
Nice.
Black bear. You know, I was all into it.
So
then.
You're hooked at that point on Alaskan.
Oh, yeah.
A little bigger than the Wisconsin bears.
Yeah.
So you moved up here. You fell in love with it. Obviously knew you were going to make it your home, right? So what kind of got you into the business? I mean, you told me one time you looked around and noticed there wasn't.
As I was getting out of the military and transitioning, you know, there was a lot of job opportunities for mechanics. Wasn't sure I wanted to really do that. What really got in my mind was, why wasn't there a tannery in Fairbanks, Alaska? It's like the hub of hunting. You know, you got lots of non-residents in and out of here, the military in and out of here, you know, the local communities, trappers.
And there had never been a tannery?
No.
Wow.
Not really at all. Huh. There was a fox farmer that did some tanning that I figured out. And, you know, so I was going through the steps, checking with EPA, DEC, chemicals, things like that. Nobody said that I couldn't have a tannery. So, you know, I got out. I got into a couple funding grant programs that paid for my way down to California.
Oh, go get educated.
And you know, worked in a guy's tannery for like 10 days, 2 weeks, and he taught me how to do things and basically learned recipes of tanning. It's just like cooking. You got a recipe.
Okay.
And, you know, came back up to Fairbanks after that was all done, and I think around 92 I started. Found a building off South Cushman behind the old Fairbanks News Agency.
Okay.
And, you know, we opened our doors and started going.
How was business when you started? Did you have to do much advertising? Was it word of mouth?
Yeah, we did some advertising. I did some advertising on the radio, got the word out. And it was really kind of nice because I would get enough work in every month to finish it in a month, pay bills and take a couple days off and go do stuff. You know, it's like, hey, everybody takes a couple days off.
Well, so that's what changed. I don't see you taking days off anymore.
So, yeah.
The good old days, right? You got a weekend once a month.
So, things really evolved, and I was a lot younger, and, you know, I'd work at the tannery all day, and I built a house for my family, and, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, get back up at 7, go to work, and, not so much no more.
Yeah. So how long did you run that operation before you moved to your current location?
Oh, yeah. So we were in there for 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know exactly. Then we moved over to Marika Street, the owners of the building, the first building, they sold it.
Okay.
And the tannery wasn't an acceptable business in there. It gets kind of smelly sometimes.
Issue or something?
No zoning. It was the landowner's preference.
Yeah.
And so then we moved over to Marika Street, and we were there for probably like 10 or 12 years. And, and then the sheet metal place right next door, what is that?
Wilbur's?
No,
over
Marika,
there.
Holiday Parks.
Holiday Parks, yeah.
Yeah, so that building was originally built by Holiday Parks.
Oh.
So it had a lot of concrete structure that they really liked, and they wanted to expand. And so they bought that from the landowner there. So we had to move out of that one, and... You know, now we're in Bochner's old airplane hangar.
Right. There's some history in that building.
Since 2006. So.
Wow. I don't know what year. Do you have any idea what year that building was put up?
No, but it was there during the flood because there's still a line on the wall.
I remember going there with my dad. We used to go picked up big, thick bungee cords for the lifts on the back of the boat. They were aircraft bungees. And so, I remember going over there. It was Jess Bochner. And you know, that's a long-time family business, too. It's been around for a while. But that gave you plenty of real estate and kind of out away from people that would worry about.
It's a really good location. It's lots of floor space.
Yep.
The bad thing, it's an old building, and it's incredibly hard to heat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that. So, and you're open 12 months a year, so you do a lot of your tanning during the winter months.
Right, yeah.
So I was, you know... The business to me, it's really interesting when you go in there. My daughter went in there once with me. She's really into horror movies. And she goes, Dad, this is perfect for a horror movie. There's skulls everywhere. There's furs on the ground. So she was into that. But So you moved in there, and again, how about the business then? You were already kind of established. You had a name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we were just full-blown. We were really, doing a lot of work. We still do a lot of work, and the business has been very successful. Turnaround time is incredibly slow right now.
Yeah, just
I tried the employee thing. I'm not a paperwork guy. And
yeah.
Don't like all the complications of having employees and
yeah.
chasing money. And so, it's a one-man operation, basically.
Right. Yeah, you got an assistant that helps.
Yeah, and we specialize in skull cleaning and antler mounts.
Well, let's talk about what the fur tannery, what services you provide, and maybe in order of volume, maybe the top four or five.
Yeah, so my bread and butter is bears.
Okay.
Lots and lots of bears we tan. And,
sure.
And they're really good, and, they're fairly easy to tan from a commercial aspect. And it's not as labor-intensive as doing small furs like, beavers and otters and marten.
Yeah.
And so I tend to stick more with the larger animals. We don't do full or flat skins like moose and caribou and buffalo anymore. The buffalo and moose are just too heavy for me to work
anymore.
They still
go outside then?
Yeah, I recommend to go outside.
Yeah, and you have probably outfits you specifically recommend.
Yeah, I recommend for people. And
yeah.
We do a lot of hide preparation. People kill something, they don't know how to flesh it or take the toes out or take heads out, split lips, turn ears, turn noses.
And then caribou, that place is full fall.
Yeah.
Just absolutely amazing.
So with a very successful, population of 40-mile caribou that we finally got up to, it's right in Fairbanks's backyard. People like that velvet. So I perfected, it took me like 5 or 6 years, but I perfected a method of preserving that velvet with, near 100% success. And, with the amount of caribou now being harvested, I do 250 sets a year.
Wow.
I fill a 10 by 10 walk-in freezer up.
I've seen that, and it's just mind-boggling. It's overwhelming. You look at it. I mean, and so how long does it take to
It takes me. It takes me almost 5 months from start to finish.
Yeah.
Then there's a few specialty people want to keep their antlers whole on the skull for record book purposes and stuff. So
you do a lot of Europeans.
Yeah, a lot of European velvets, which is time consuming. But the actual preserving of the velvet takes me, 3, 4, 5 months to get them all completed and shipped out or got back to people.
And then as far as moose, mostly just. Head mount rack or
We do antler and European mounts for moose. We don't do any more taxidermy work anymore.
Is there a place in for say somebody wanted a shoulder mount or something or even a full mount? Is there places in Anchorage that do that are recommended or do you most of them still go outside
for full mounts?
Not outside, but I mean, it's like for a shoulder mount.
Oh no, we have several really good taxidermists here in town.
That's right. And then Anchorage. I guess I was thinking of fish. Nobody's doing fish anymore.
Yeah, there's a fella or two.
Is there?
They come and go.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in my mind, and I used to do taxidermy work. That's the most profitable in the taxidermy world is the most profitable thing to do is fish, especially if you're really good as an artist and can use airbrushes.
Yeah.
You have low overhead. You don't need a lot of floor space.
Yeah.
Most people are doing artificial mounts anymore.
Right,
so,
sure.
No, if you know how to paint and are good, that's a business that can make money for you.
Yeah, it just seems unusual. There's not a whole lot of my son-in-law wanted to get a fish, a big grayling, 18-inch grayling mounted, and just couldn't find anybody locally to do it.
It's a little harder in the interior because we don't have a lot of fishing.
Yeah.
A lot of salmon fishing. We no salmon fishing anymore, but. The Anchorage and Kenai's got lots of fabulous fish taxidermists.
So we're talking with Al Barrett, a Board of Game member, owner of the Fur Tannery here in town. We'll be right back and talk a little bit more about the biggest mistakes people make with their game.
The Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio will return right after this.
For more than 75 years, the go-to outdoor business in Fairbanks has been Compos. Bob Compos Sr. first opened the doors on 12th and Cushman in 1945. A lot has changed since then, but one thing hasn't changed. Compos' passion for getting you outdoors and away from the rat race. And their business philosophy can be wrapped up in a few words Bob Sr. used to say. And that's, treat people right and they'll tell a few others. treat them poorly, and they'll tell a few dozen. Compo, on Boat Street, doing business in Fairbanks since Harry Truman was president.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs, starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m. The Buzz at 11:30, a look at Alaska's budding new industry, brought to you by Good Titrations, followed by Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical at noon. Then it's the Compos Outdoor Show at 12:30. And don't miss Fairbanks Foodies at 5:30, talking everything food and fun in Fairbanks. Weekends just got local with KFAR Radio. And now, back to the Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, Fairbanks. We're talking with Al Barrett, Board of Game member and owner of the Fairbanks Fur Tannery, longtime Laundry House gang member and a guru when it comes to knowledge on state fishing and hunting regs and things like that. So, Al, we were talking a little bit about your tannery and that you do mostly bear work. That's kind of your real niche, tanning and some, you know, moose and caribou skull work and all that. Just touch on, before we get into the political side of what you do, what are the, just the brief of the biggest either mistakes you see when somebody brings you a bear rug, bear hide, or moose or caribou, things that are either easily avoidable or just some tips to save people some money and time?
Yeah, so, you know, during the springtime when people are harvesting bears, the biggest thing that I see is they get a bear. It's usually old dark 30 in the morning. You know, they either, most of them get it rough skinned out, and they put it in a cooler with ice, and they leave it in the back of their truck and got to go to work and, you know, call me up and said, I'm going to bring a bear over, and we open a cooler and we get this wonderful odor.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a huge mistake. I see that at least a dozen times where, you know, that cooler's just not going to keep that bear cold enough.
Right.
And it's in water, so bacteria starts to grow, and that's a huge mistake.
Yep.
And in the fall time, what I see is people are normally out moose hunting, caribou hunting, and they, you know, incidentally find a black bear and they kill it. Well, they get it rough skinned out and they put it underneath a tree or something. Got to go back to moose camp. You know, we got to hunt moose, and they leave it sit there for 2 or 3, 4 days.
Yep.
And then bring it in because it's not their priority. And then so there's a lot of issues with that. The one other mistake I see with a lot of big hides like bears is people do a great job. They get them skinned out, and, you know, they can't get to the tannery or they don't know what they're going to do yet, so they roll it up and put it in the freezer.
Oh, yeah.
But how they roll it up is the mistake. They generally roll it up fur to fur, or skin to skin, I should say.
Okay.
And they usually start at the head and roll it up into a ball and then stick it in their freezer. So with all that hair is insulation. So it takes 2 or 3 days for that cold air to get to the center of that hide. So if it's really warm, that hide is kind of cooking in there for the amount of time it takes the cold air to actually freeze it and kill stuff.
So what's the best way?
So the best way is to, you know, go hair to hair and roll it up from the back feet so the face is on the outside. And why I say the face is on the outside, that's, if you're going to do taxidermy work, that's your most important piece. So you want that to freeze as fast as possible.
And do you recommend people that don't know what they're doing let you do the feet and the lips and such?
Well, they do a lot of that stuff, but they can't, you know, because of their job times or our shop hours or whatever. We're not open on, you know, Sundays. And so they got to do something with it in the meantime.
Sure.
They know better not to just leave it in the garage so they get it in the freezer.
Right.
It's just, you know, get it in the freezer properly.
Yeah, I always thought it'd be great if there was an app for people that go out. I mean, you should always go with somebody who knows what they're doing first. But if you go out with somebody, or if you're out, if you find out, like you said, you get a bear and you didn't anticipate it, and it would be nice if you had an app, something you could refer to if you were, you know, just out in the field. I've seen some cases of, even with moose, that would have been a total waste if we hadn't stumbled onto them and helped them out. You know, one guy that just horrible story.
Yeah, it's just being prepared, you know.
Yeah.
If you're going to go out there and do those things, you learn how to do it. And today, you know, with YouTube, everything's on YouTube.
Yeah.
There's a video on everything on how to butcher a moose, to skinning a bear, to, you know, taking the toes out of a, you know, out of an ermine.
So let's talk a little bit about the government side of this. And of course, you've been on the Board of Game. You've been involved with the Board of Game forever. I don't think I know anybody that's been to more Board of Game meetings, even when you weren't on the Board of Game, which I commend you for. And of course, now I know you got on the Board of Game because the pay is so good.
Yeah, exactly.
We're joking there. It's an effort of love and commitment, because it really isn't anybody think does. There's no money involved. But so what changes? Like, let's talk about the state government first and state of Alaska.
Well, I'll just back up here a little bit, and you know, so it was the very late '90s. You know, so I was really involved with fishing and hunting You know, I, like everybody else, I seen some things that should be changed, or I thought it could be done a little differently. And I started, you know, hear this Board of Game thing and, you know, started investigating that. And then I found out there's a, what they call the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, and you could go talk to these people and they can make changes. And, you know, and I'm like, oh.
The system.
Yeah, I'll go there. And, you know, there were several little people that are on the AC that are still there, you know, when I first showed up on the scene. And, you know, was...
There's 13 of these ACs around the state.
There's like 84 of them.
Oh, there is. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of the racks.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's 84.
And so, you know, I proposed, pitched a couple ideas, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, you got to write that up. And so, you know, one thing led to another. You got to figure the system out. You know, and then sometimes I didn't like what the AC had to tell me, so... I'm like, well, I don't need these guys. I'll do it myself. And then there was a Board of Game meeting in town, and I wrote a couple proposals up, and they were at that meeting, and I testified, and they shot them down. And they would, you know, many of my proposals back in those days got shot down because of this regulation book. You know, one, we can't talk about it at this meeting because it's not in cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And two, we have this regulation in place that – you can't change, or this statute in place that you can't change. And I'm like, wow. So, you know, I like to figure out processes. I was in the military. It's all about process and how to work the system. So, you know, that's what started me going. And I've had several excellent mentors, you know, from wildlife troopers to lawyers to judges to fish and game personnel. It's like I got a biology degree for free going over to Fish and Game and picking their brains on things.
Well, so when did you first get on the AC?
Oh, yeah. Must have been right in the late 90s, maybe the early 2000s.
Yeah.
When I finally just said, well, I'm going to go get on that thing.
Yeah, and it's actually a system that can work well. Yeah, I know there's struggles with it. There's just a myriad of proposals.
Yeah.
Didn't used to be so many, but isn't there over 100 or 130 or something?
Yeah,
sometimes?
There's been steady at most meetings have at least 100 proposals. They've kind of, you know, limited. Now we're on these cycles, so we don't get to write everything up. You know, one thing when I was on the AC and people would bring ideas, or AC members would bring ideas, and I had that codified book. Nobody had one.
Yeah.
You know, I went to Fish and Game and you see them all over the building, and you know, some tech that never needs it or has it, they have one. I said, can I borrow that? I need to learn how to use this thing and find things. And that's how I got into the codified section.
Yeah.
And we'd have debates at AC meetings, and I said, well, no, here's what the actual regulation says.
Yeah.
Here's what we got to fix.
Right.
Or we can or can't do something.
Yeah, and most of those people probably, I mean, the book's sitting on the shelf, but how many people have gone through it?
Like, yeah, exactly. So, you know, you go to a Fairbanks AC meeting now, and I bet you 75% of the members has got a book.
What do you think about the idea that's bounced around that if your name was to get on the Board of Game nomination list, you would have to be a member of the AC at some point so you understand process? We've talked about that, but I don't know exactly how you feel.
I was a big proponent of that, you know, understand the system. So, Once you become a board member, it doesn't take you a term to understand how the system actually works and all the intricacies of it, which there's some real advantages to that because you're a really working board member at the time and not educating yourself on things. But there was three new nominees for the Board of Game this last cycle. And so before the young lady that got on here this last time, there was two other new members. Never been to an AC meeting, they weren't involved at all. They were just hunters and sportsmen.
So
they got in. But my point is they turned out to be two excellent Board of Game members.
Okay. Independent thinkers.
Independent, ethical. Sometimes when you learn the process, you get immune to certain things or you get expect certain things. So they didn't have that. They didn't have that baggage. They were just like sponges. And they educated themselves. They were really fantastic board members.
Well, that's good because we've had some bad ones over the years. I mean, we've had people that either have a fixed agenda.
Oh yeah.
Or just no knowledge and are just like there for the ride.
Yeah. No. These last three, just have a passion for the outdoors and wildlife management. So.
But still good if somebody in the listening audience was considering getting into a little more engaged part of the process. You would recommend that get on the AC or try.
Get involved
at least one term.
Get involved with your local AC, attend meetings. That really gets you. It really gets you, especially if you have ideas or thoughts, because there's people there to help you.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to write a proposal, you don't know where to go to get the form for it now.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days where you just wrote it on a piece of paper and turned it, mailed it.
Yeah.
Now it's all electronic.
And there's seven members on the Board of Game.
Well, like 13. On the board. Oh no, seven members on the Board of Game.
Yeah, and AC. Then the AC is 13.
Yeah.
Okay.
And and ACs vary on membership.
Yeah.
Due to their community.
How often do the ACs meet, and how often does the Board of Game?
Fairbanks, the road system ACs are pretty good because they got, they can meet, so they meet once a year for about 6 months. And they do both Board of Fish and Board of Game.
Okay.
So they're busy, and they have subcommittees, that specialize in trapping or fishing or. And in other places like Anchorage, they have designated seats. So many commercial fishermen, so many sport fishermen, so many hunters.
Yeah. Well, and you've got the reputation on the board where you're you listen to all sides. You don't take a hardcore opinion one way or the other and try and learn as much as you can and make an independent vote. Sometimes it's what our group would expect, and other times we go, well, that's weird. And then you will explain to us why you voted that way. And I think that's what we need is people that were willing to absorb all the information, make a fair decision, base it on important things like opportunity, states' rights stuff. It's really good to have you on the board for that. The other thing I always like to talk about, when we get somebody this is basically a volunteer position. They cover some of your travel expenses or whatever when you go somewhere, but it's an awful lot of work, and I know you do a lot of studying for it. It's a big chunk of time away from your business.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people, if you've got a bear or you need some tanning work or something done, go see Al. I mean, a guy that puts that much into the community. It's really good to sponsor that person and help when you've got it. Don't send something outside if you don't have to. Don't send it to Anchorage. So that's what we like to do is recommend people that are good for the community, and you've definitely been that. Well, that's pretty much it, Al. I appreciate you coming in, and so people know the real Al Barrett, not just one of the Laundry House Gang members, but one of our favorite Laundry House Gang members, along with Heimer and Pete Buist and Tinker and the gang, Karen Gordon. There's a lot of us that are kind of have a mini group where we'll meet with the senator, legislators, just five or seven of us, and Al is always in that group. Because he's like having a stack of encyclopedias right next to you. Well, that's it, Fairbanks. Appreciate you tuning in, listening to the Compo Outdoor Show. We'll see you next Saturday.
You have been listening to the Compo's Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio, streaming live at KFARradio.com. To listen back to this program or any past episodes, simply click on the Compo's Outdoor Show in the Archives tab on the website.